Well, as Seattle booms with construction, there's all the more reason to find an oasis in the city. Something like what you'll find at the Waterfall Garden Park, which is described as a hidden gem. Nearly all cities have them, and our next guest, garden scholar and author of the book Green Escapes, has cataloged where to find what he calls urban oases. Toby Musgrave, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having me.
And what exactly is an urban oasis, and how is it different from just a park?
Well, the way I look at it is it's about scale, and it's also about knowing about these places. I think when it comes to big green escapes, like big parks, they're familiar. People know about them, and you can usually find a space within a big green space to call your own. But the aim of green escapes is to bring those less well-known, those smaller, those intimate, those hidden secrets to people's knowledge, and to introduce these little local secrets to a wider audience so people can just get away from the city for a few minutes here and there.
I was just recently at an event that was on the 9th floor of a building right in downtown Boston. And I got out on the 9th floor of the elevator. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I walk outside and it's like a huge grassy lawn right in the middle of the city. It was incredible.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that was so fun about researching the book is that there's such a diversity of different types of green escapes. So anything from roof gardens to, for example, in London, an old burnt out church that's being converted into a green escape, railway sidings that are being converted, old cemeteries, just the list goes on and on. And I think one of the delights about these smaller gardens and green parks is the surprise about coming across them.
Mm-hmm. There are 237 of these urban oases in your book. Have you been to all of them?
No, I wish I had. I think if I was to visit every single one, I'd still be doing the traveling now. I've been to about a third of them.
And what's your favorite so far?
It's almost unfair to say one over another. I mean, I can give you a couple of examples, the ones that I really just love also because of the cities. There's Parco Sovello in Rome. I mean, Rome's one of my favorite all-time cities, and to go to this garden, which overlooks the Tiber, which is full of citrus trees, which smell gorgeous in the spring, and watch the sunset is quite special. And again, it's one of those places where very few people know it, so you kind of have the place to yourself if you're lucky. Another of my favorites, which is probably quite well known if you're in the know, is Paley Park in New York. But also another one in New York, which isn't so well known, when we were talking about gardens on roofs, there's the Elevated Acre, which is right down the end of Manhattan, which has a stunning view out over to over the river and over to Brooklyn as well.
Would you consider the High Line in New York to be an urban oasis?
I think it is. Definitely comes into that category. But one of the focal points of the book was to introduce gardens that are not so well known. And, you know, the High Line is a fantastic, fantastic place. But, it's so well known now that I just didn't want to include it because people are so familiar with it. But having said that, there's a lovely example of another repurposing of a railway line, the Rail Park in Philadelphia, for example, which has just opened its first phase this year. So the High Line is a great inspiration, and I think it was an incredibly innovative idea, although they kind of pinched the idea from Paris, but we'll leave it at that.
Well, and by the way, it's become one of the most popular tourist destinations in New York City at this point. This trend is not new, of course. You go back to a garden that you point out in the Tang Dynasty in China, 2,000 years old.
Yeah, I think sort of garden making is one of those activities that defies time, really. I think as soon as we stop becoming nomads and hunter-gatherers and settle down to be an agrarian society, I'm absolutely certain people would have taken a few flowers from the wild to create a space around their environment that was beautiful to be in. And there's perhaps no archaeological evidence for that, but that's come on through time.
What does it tell you about us in the year 2018 that, you know, we want to live in cities, many of us, but we also want these escapes in our cities?
I mean, I guess it's we live and work in cities because that's how civilizations and cultures have evolved. And it's also relatively convenient. Also, sometimes you get stuck in the traffic and may not think so. But personally, I think that us as a species, Homo sapiens, is kind of wired towards the green. It's where we evolved from originally. And I think we just respond very positively to areas that have that green growing area to them. We study after study from academics shows that, you know, using green spaces is beneficial both physically and mentally for our well-being. And I think that's one of the reasons I wrote the book is because, you know, we all spend time in cities. We get stressed out, whether we're working, whether we're commuting, whether we're living there, whether we're visiting as tourists. And sometimes we just need those sort of decompression chambers to just go, calm down, just revivify the soul. And green spaces do that for us. And I like these little ones because they have that sense of intimacy and privacy, which you can really feel yourself in. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
That's Toby Musgrave, who is a garden scholar and the author of the new book, Green Escapes. Toby, very interesting. Thank you.
Pleasure.